In 1838, 4-year-old Wes rode next to his father, Joseph Powell, on the last leg of their journey south to Jackson from Chillicothe. Their horse-drawn cart rolling easily down the unusually wide dirt road that wound through the rugged Appalachian foothills of southeastern Ohio. They may have felt like pioneers, but that same hard-beaten path had carried multifarious travelers since the last ice age, all drawn by the region's salt licks, the deposits of natural saltwater springs, so thick as to permanently frost the banks of local creeks. First had come the mastodons and shaggy mammoths of the Pleistocene, later followed by herds of bison, and then the first human beings to leave a mark on the land, the mysterious mound-building peoples of a mere 2 millennia before. In historic times, the Shawnee had padded silently on moccasined feet, and just 3 decades earlier, the first European settlers had crossed the Appalachians to settle. 6 age-old salt roads converged like the spokes of a wagon wheel upon what had only very recently become the town of Jackson. The Powell's cart pulled up the steep escarpment to the rutted main street of Jackson, which crested the 50-foot ridgeline, commanding views of a rugged, hilly land harrowed by ridges, deep ravines, and creeks. Mean-looking wooden houses did duty for the town's main street, every bit as tough as its namesake, Andrew Jackson, Indian killer and hard-handed populist president. Eden it was not, but elements of civilization had reached there, most notably Presbyterian, Methodist, and Baptist churches. Jackson also boasted a post office, hotel, and 6 shops, including Mrs. Sylvester's, which sold ginger cakes. The town hall faced French's Tavern, Jackson's most thriving establishment. The 34-year-old Methodist preacher had brought his young family here from western New York State at the suggestion of a fellow Welsh minister. They had agreed that too few souls were left to save in the New York Panhandle, a region roiled by evangelical Christian revivals. The Reverend Benjamin Chidlaw knew of several largely Welsh communities that thrived 20 miles outside Jackson, whose men worked blast furnaces that turned rich local veins of iron ore into pig iron, which the burgeoning railroads were already consuming in great quantities. Chidlaw figured that these devout Calvinistic Methodists might profit from some ministering. That was all Joseph had needed to uproot his wife, Mary, 2 daughters, and Wes, to journey some 500 miles southwest. Joseph likely did not know that his destination lay in a veritable war zone. Only 50 miles separated Jackson from the Ohio River, which divided the free state of Ohio from slaveholding Kentucky. The lands bordering this magic line, as Harriet Tubman famously called it, rippled and bucked in disorder as Southern bounty hunters pursued slaves escaping northward, often clashing with those who did not recognize human beings as chattel. In Ohio particularly, an outspoken breed of take-no-prisoners abolitionism had arisen, met with equally strident resistance from a merchant class desperate to preserve commerce with the cotton-rich South. And 120 miles west of Jackson, in Cincinnati, the harrowing story of a mother's winter passage over the frozen Ohio to freedom, clutching her baby to her breast, would inspire Harriet Beecher Stowe to write the anti-slavery polemic Uncle Tom's Cabin, which, next to the Bible, would become the most read book of the 19th century and hasten the nation toward terrible civil war. Joseph's immersion in this fraught borderland would force him down an unanticipated path. Unlike the vast majority of evangelical Methodists, most of whom condoned slavery, either owning slaves themselves or trusting in the peculiar institution to fade in time, Joseph would find that his faith called upon him to reject human bondage outright. He would become a radical, one among only a handful of white abolitionists making up a fringe movement whose members Ralph Waldo Emerson dismissed as angry bigots. No one, certainly not the Sage of Concord, liked even the hint of getting their noses rubbed in the moral contradictions upon which the founders had built the Republic. Joseph's newly awakened beliefs would bring violence to his family's very door. His son would feel the repercussions of his father's radicalized passions most keenly. A flare of violence would imprint itself on the boy for life, shaping, more than any other experience over 7 decades, how he would bring himself to face this treacherous world.